There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
So I see, hey, Willie, what are you doing over there? You're dismembering. Is that a human body there? Oh, I see how you're doing it there. Oh, so you're cutting off the feet. You're smashing up the teeth there. Oh, you don't want to do that.
You don't definitely
do
not. That.
What you want to do is you want to cut open the flap of the... Hey, Billy, come over here. Come look what Willie's doing. Oh, yeah, he's doing it wrong. You really want to peel the face off like it's a mask over a skeleton.
All right.
How you want to do it.
This is the
Canada
last...
is filled with backseat drivers.
Oh, my goodness.
It is nothing but backseat drivers in every aspect
of
life.
Well, let's get back into it. This is the last podcast on the left. I'm Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks. We have shirtless Henry Zebrowski. Hard as a soft cheese. All right, we're on to Robert Pickton part two. I guess it only gets more brutal, more disgusting, and more Canadian from here.
Ooh, man, this is truly the Canadian serial killer story.
Oh my.
I really like it. It's all in one. He's like Johnny Appleseed for us. Because you know that Johnny Appleseed killed some vagrants.
I'm sure
he did.
You
know, as he was going down the road, he's planting trees. He's like, yes, every tree. It's legal for me to kill one boy.
Maybe. He's really just a litterer.
Yeah.
Isn't that not right?
No, actually, he's the opposite of the litterer.
Is that right?
But yeah, he's a fruit bat.
Oh, you're talking about Johnny Appleseed.
I'm talking Johnny Appleseed. Yeah. I'm sorry, I got sidetracked by the Johnny Appleseed conversation, but we are on to Robert Pickton.
Yeah, this is not an episode about Johnny Appleseed.
We do have to cover him at some point.
Soon, that is an episode.
So in the early 80s, Willie Pickton started taking the excess animal parts from his mini butcherings down to a rendering plant called West Coast Reduction in Vancouver.
That is where I'm going to go to get my stomach reduction surgery, my body contour surgery. I am going to West Coast Reduction, and hopefully they just don't make me look like a huge pig.
Now, for those of you who don't know, rendering plants repurpose all of the extra parts of an animal unfit for human consumption in their original form. For example, entrails, bone, feathers, fur, and whatever else is left over from the carcass.
Hmm.
Rendering plants also process cooking grease from restaurants, and all of it's mixed in one big vat, ground up, and moved to fryers where it's all cooked until the grease is separated.
And technically, at one point, the Fieri family, the grandfather Fieri was visiting one of these rendering plants, and a single hair fell from his goatee, and the sprung guy.
Oh, Guy Fieri. Isn't that amazing? I could see you there just as a child, just wearing short shorts, just with a big ladle and just licking the spoon as you dip it in this disgusting sludge.
Come on in, the water's fine.
But I'm still wearing a fucking shirt inside because I was just so ashamed of my body.
Mrs. Zebrowski, we need to talk about your son.
Oh, God. Just let him swim. Just, I know. Is he eating too much of the swell? Is he eating too much? The kids can't swim. Oh, yeah. We're so proud of him. He's got such a big throat. He got his father's throat.
He's hired.
Well, the grease that is separated from the solid stuff is then made into cosmetics, soap, paint, or candy.
So you mean to tell me, honestly, they take assholes and sinews, hoofs and fur, and that's what's, like, on our celebrities' faces?
Yeah, gelatin.
So J-Law, when she went to the Emmys, was covered with the slurry of whatever it is we choose not to eat as the apex predator.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's actually kind of, that makes me feel good in a strange way. We're all just covered in slime.
Well, the goo left over is pressed into pellets for farm animals or the little stars that you feed your pet cat.
Oh, Wendy.
And most of Robert Pickton's victims over the years, or parts of them at least, would find their way into the vats at West Coast Reduction.
God, it just sounds like the place where the Joker was made.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like in Gotham where you go to hide out.
Yeah, it's like Axis Chemicals.
Ooh, yeah. I am trying to think, what kind of candy was made here? I mean, it's got to be a hard candy.
No, absolutely
not. A soft candy?
No, as far as
I
know.
A Werther's Original? Oh my God, if they made Werther's out of this.
As far as I know, gelatin in candies. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Is that, like, if you look at a candy, like, say, like a Mike and Ike?
Sure.
Mike and Ike, definitely.
You know what I do? I only eat the mics. Isn't that weird?
You only eat the mic. Which one of the mics?
Whichever one I call a mic. I say, you're a mic, I eat you, you're a mic, I throw you away.
Well, guess what? The mics are the ones that are made out of the poor, the scrape from the bottom homeless men.
Is that...
that are just sort of the troll of this country, the people, the lost, the forgotten.
Well,
the ones that there's no reach out for. They're the ones turned into the mics.
I'm eating the Ikes. From now on, I'm going to eat the Ikes.
Well, whatever Willie didn't take to West Coast reduction, he fed to the pigs.
Ooh. Lucky pigs.
I know. That's the thing. They're eating nothing but candy.
No, they're
having
not eating
fun.
Candy.
And cat food.
No, they're not eating candy and cat food. They're eating humans.
They're eating just parts.
I don't think you didn't get what I was saying.
I got stuck
there.
On the candy. Okay, so the pigs are eating humans.
Yeah, they're eating humans. I don't, you were the type of senator that allowed to happen what happened in Vancouver during the 90s.
I'm still thinking about the candies.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you think about is nothing but candy, just Mike and Ikes.
That's the problem. That's what Ronald Reagan did. Nothing but jelly beans.
Jelly. Now, Willie was a steady customer at West Coast Reduction for decades, and nobody asked why Willie, unlike other farmers, would include big black chunks of meat with all the rest of the useless entrails and bones.
So he's given basically just big, dinty more size chunks of meat to these people. And how many years was this happening?
20?
And they didn't, but that's not a red flag for them.
Well, Willie Pickton was actually pretty careful about what actually went into the rendering plant, but we're going to get into that on episode 3.
Ooh.
Now, the rendering plant just dumped the barrels and sent Willie on his way right out into Vancouver's prostitute stroll, as it was called, which began just a block away from the plant.
Oh. What I like is that every single documentary I watch, so first of all, imagine the smell.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Just the fumes just coming out of this rendering plant mixed with the girls. They obviously have to cover up. Like extra because of the smell, because you're like, these are not Willie Pictons. These are normal, like, working girls. These are out there trying to go to normal human beings for the most part. And so they're trying to smell normal. He's out there. What I loved is that every single documentary about Willie Picton always called it going out on the town.
Right.
And that's when Willie would go out on the town again. And I was like, he wasn't putting on a top hat and coattails. This isn't like Broadway. This isn't Park Place from a Monopoly world.
Right.
This is the rendering plant district of Vancouver.
Why don't we build around the rendering plant? We'll treat it like a Major League Baseball stadium. We'll put restaurants all around it. That's a great idea, right?
Margaritaville, like a Universal City Walk, and it has an AMC 20, and it has like a frozen yogurt place.
Hey, I'm Guy Fieri. I'm looking to set up an American Grill right next to this here rendering plant. This is actually where I was born, you know.
Now, we talked a little bit about our own experiences in Vancouver's downtown east side on the last episode, but it really can't be understated what sort of hellhole this place really has been for the last 30 or so years. I mean, when we went to the downtown east side, we were talking about last week, when we went to it, that is nothing new. That isn't like the heroin epidemic that North America is going through right now. That didn't produce the downtown east side. No. The downtown east side has been like that for decades.
East Hastings is a broken in couch. That is they are very comfortable with their heroin.
People are real used to what's going on down there. It's just like everyone's got their spots. You can literally see where it's been like, well, that's Stute's, that's Spider Joe's spot, and over here, that's Broken Window Heidi's spot.
Yeah, it is like when you go to your friend's house and have all the furniture has springs sticking out of it, and you sit down, they're like, no, you don't sit there. What are you, an idiot? Don't sit there. Everyone knows that's the springy cushion.
Well, back in the late 70s, local politicians made a concerted effort to push any and all unsavory elements in Vancouver to this specific location. Sex workers, drug addicts, and mental patients from the recently closed Essendale Hospital all found a home in the downtown east side.
Now, when they're doing that, do they actually just be like, out of sight? Out of mind.
Yeah, exactly. I think so. What they did.
See you later.
I think so. I think they just put them there in a neighborhood, and then they were like, well, we gave them things. We gave them infrastructure. We gave them places where we could clean needles, and basically we're just like, boom, y'all just stay here. We're not going to put any of the fancy restaurants or any of the fancy stores here, because you notice in Vancouver, it's like 5 blocks north.
That's it.
It's over in that was a Gastown.
Gastown, yeah.
It's down in Gastown's where it's nice and sweet, and you can see the dividing line.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, they just stopped putting shit in over here. They just let them, and so they're rich stay over on that side simply because the shops are over there, and over here there's no place for middle income or anybody else to go to.
Now, most of these people live, when they have enough money for a room, in single occupancy hotels. The worst of these was Vernon Rooms, which was said to be a breeding ground for hepatitis and rumored to be where Vietnamese gang members shot snuff films. But of course, that's just a big rumor.
But also, there is an American translation, I think, that was wrong here. They were making snuffle films, which is just weird erotic videos of people with colds. That's what they thought they were doing. But then, you know what they got? Nothing but trouble.
Nothing but trouble. Oh, my God.
But honestly, the single occupancy rooms kind of sound fun. It's old school, like Private Eye. Like, you sit there where you got your typewriter and you're writing a great American novel. You're drinking hot whiskey.
They're not the character from Transmet. I mean, they're not writing. They're on heroin. They're shaking in the corner in between different sexual exchanges.
No, it's much closer to Basket Case than it is to, like, a Private Eye story.
Good reference.
Well, thank you.
By the way, Cult of Chucky, not that bad of a movie.
Not that bad.
I did. A fun movie.
It's worth it. It's a worthwhile watch. Yeah, it's very good.
I love Jennifer Tilly.
Well, the downtown east side, street drugs, crack houses, brothels, pornography studios, if it was bad for you, that place had it. Well, the amazing thing about this place is that it usually isn't violent, not unless you're a sex worker. Mm. This area could easily have been described as a playground for serial killers for about 20 years. As we said last episode, Gary Ridgway was said to claim at least a few victims here. When Ridgway was caught, police found a map of the lower mainland of Canada in his truck, and a musician named Gary Big, that's Big with two G's, said his girlfriend used to have a good time in Ridgway's RV when he came to town.
Ugh.
And then there was Gilbert Paul Jordan.
Uh-oh.
Jordan particularly targeted First Nations women, who make up somewhere around 15% of the sex workers in the downtown east side, but around 40% of murder victims in the area. From what I can tell, Native sex workers are Vancouver's version of the least dead, much like Black sex workers are treated here in the United States. In fact, this story shares quite a bit with the story we told oh so long ago about South Central LA. In South Central LA in the mid-80s, it was suspected that there were up to 6 different serial killers targeting Black sex workers, including the Grim Sleeper. Mm. The body count was in the high dozens, and no true investigation took place. In fact, back then, you hear stories about the LAPD. When they would find a Black prostitute, they would write DNI on the body bag, which just stood for Do Not Investigate.
Well, because to them, they didn't want to crack open the hornet's nest.
Yeah.
They feel like this idea of, like, oh, if we go in there and mix it. And also, they just didn't give a shit. And so we're going to find out the same thing with the Vancouver police and just how deeply they didn't serve their country. It's like, it's really fucked up during this time period.
Yep. Under-policing is also very dangerous.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Now, the same type of thing was happening at the same time in Vancouver. For example, the aforementioned Gilbert Jordan's MO was to force Native women to drink deadly amounts of liquor so he could watch them die of alcohol poisoning.
Good Lord, that's like Ed Larson to himself.
Yeah. I know. I have to think about my life.
I think you're a serial killer.
Yeah, of myself.
Now, this guy was active for decades and was so well known by name that cops made a joke out of it. When they found a Native woman who had died from alcohol poisoning, they'd say, oh, we got another Jordan-esque here.
Whatever.
Jeez.
They just didn't care enough to prove it.
That's fucking terrible.
I guess that is very difficult to prove, alcohol poisoning.
It's difficult to prove, but, you know, they knew. They knew that this guy was doing shit. And I guarantee you it wasn't the only fucking thing that he was doing.
No.
They just needed to look into it. They just needed to have some sort of proof. And they finally got it, at least a little bit, in 1988, 23 years after Jordan's first suspected murder. Even then, it was just manslaughter, and he only got 6 years.
Jeez.
Wow.
Gilbert Paul Jordan, it sounds like he could have been a horrible clothing designer as well, but he went another way with it.
It's all overalls. It's all overalls, and the best part about it is that your dick can hang out the side. I love my new, it's overmost, is what I call it.
I see.
There was another 2 possible serial killers besides this guy in Picton going in the 80s. Mm. From 1982 till 1989, 14 women were killed. 8 were strangled, pointing towards Ridgway. 5 were stabbed, and 1 was bound and tortured. Despite all this, the Vancouver Police Department refused to admit that there was even 1 serial killer, much less 4.
What are they doing?
Think about how much work it is to investigate 1 serial killer, never mind 4. As soon as this shit starts piling up, it's like we got the hobbits in a Vancouver Police Department that are looking at this shit and basically just saying like, oh, this will stop eventually. This will all eventually stop, and then we can all get back to, like, oh, you guys, we can take those ski shots together. We can go axe throwing. Mm. We can do anything. But we just need to, once we get to May, I'm certain with Easter, all of this will die down.
But isn't this, if you get into the police force, you become a detective, a serial killer's on the loose, wouldn't this be why you got in? Isn't this exciting? And then to have 4 of them? I don't understand how you don't just flip this and be excited to go to work every day and try to hunt a killer.
It's not up to you. It's not up to the detectives. It's not up to the beat cops. It's up to the people at the top. It's up to the people at the top. Have you never seen The Wire?
No, I haven't. Okay. I was watching Cult of Chucky for quite a while now.
Or any cop show. Ever.
No, I haven't.
Any cop
I've seen,
movie
I watched ever. NYPD Blue growing up, and I saw Dennis Franz's ass, and that has traumatized me.
You should watch the first 48.
Oh, I do
if
watch the first 48.
Chicago,
I love the
first
48,
48,
of course.
Because talk about because first 48 is like, those are cops working hard, and they still look bored. And they still are just like, well, you know, it's just, they're just so broken by how many fucking dead bodies they see a week that they're just out there just like, yep, they're on the slab. But they work hard.
They do. Yeah. First 48, a great docuseries.
Yeah,
check that one out.
These people do work hard, but without, I mean, like Henry was saying, serial killer investigations are very difficult, and they're very expensive.
Okay.
And if you don't get the funding and the support from up top, then nothing is going to happen. And we're about to get into just how the Vancouver Police Department rejected all of that.
These politicians are in there thinking about candy. They got to start funding the police to get detectives
positions.
To find these
you
serial
pivoted.
Killers.
You just pivoted 3 times.
Good Lord.
The RCMP, remember the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Canada's version of the FBI? They even tried
Oh, FBI is here.
The RCMP even tried to help out in the early 90s by forming a team of profilers called Project Eclipse. But that went nowhere because the Vancouver Police Department had no idea what to do with their findings, nor did they want to know. Now, some give the VPD the caveat that profiling was still pretty new at this point, but for fuck's sake, profiling had been used to capture people back in the 50s, and the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit had been around since 1972.
Damn.
They have no fucking excuse here.
Damn, dog meat.
Dude, well,
he's on
been
fire.
Getting,
Marcus
I've,
Parks is on fire.
I've been getting so fucking worked up about this week, and if you want to see evidence of just how lazy, ignorant, and spiteful the VPD could be, look no further than Kim Rossmo. Rossmo was a world-renowned profiler who actually worked in the Vancouver Police Department. Not only did they refuse to use him at any time, but they actively and openly despised him.
Boom shakalaka from way downtown. Marcus Parks, he's on fire.
Goes the dynamite. Honestly, Rossmo was the kind of guy, though, that would ask at the end of class, teacher, you forgot to give homework. Like, he was that kind of guy, which is what you want. For me, as a police officer, I would like somebody who takes his job, like, way too seriously rather than a bunch of guys essentially fly fishing out of their fucking garbage cans in their office.
Rossmo developed a system called geographic profiling, which hypothesizes, in most cases correctly, that serial killers start with areas they're most comfortable with, then expand that area more and more the longer they go without getting caught. He built an entire computer program. Like, it was a topographical program. Mm. It was brilliant. And he went all over the world. You know, he consulted on thousands of cases in countries all across the world and helped out in a lot of them. And considering how Willie started with girls picked up near the rendering plant, then moved to other locations up and down the east side, this would have been the perfect tool for them to use. Look at where the victims were last seen, find out who spends a lot of time in that particular area, and go from there. But the men in the VPD who impeded Rossmo at every turn were only concerned with how much attention Rossmo got from his brilliant profiling work and resented the fact that he had jumped high in the ranks because of his skills.
Oh, my goodness. The infighting, not saving lives.
Believe me, when we were doing the program, I forget what it is. We've done this discussion before, and we always forget where you get the stickers and the button. You get the free pizzas for reading a book in elementary school.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, the Pizza Hut Pizza Club.
Yeah. I was racking up so many free pizzas because, number one, love pizza.
Of course.
Number two, I loved to read genuinely, even as a child. And so I'm out there, bam, bam, sinking fucking shots from the three throw line. That's books. I'm a bing, bing, bing. The jealousy I got, I got on my back. I understand where Rossmo's coming from.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did very well in that as well because I learned all you have to do is have three facts about the book.
Yeah.
Cheat. You just go through, you open up four random pages, you'll pick up three facts, and then you just kind of lie.
Hey, teacher, I read that book. I read the book. It's got a dog in it.
Yeah.
Finds a flower in it.
Benjamin, you're actively just looking at the book in front of me.
I'm reading it.
Yeah.
It's got a talking cheese in it.
Yeah.
So give me my damn pizza.
And then you're so physically intimidating to the teachers that you were just giving you pizza.
Oh, I was.
I don't think it was just that easy. No, I just think they were giving you points.
I was just one of the average ones in seventh grade. Yeah. I didn't hit my spurt until 13.
Well, me and Henry, man, we were getting free pizzas left and right, and we were doing it honestly.
And we're all together now. Who won? Who won?
Well, the guys that were impeding Rossmo's investigation, they were known in the police department as the Old Boys Club.
I never want to know what the Old Boys Club is like. Just the cigar ash, the salami, and the disgusting, what's the name of those little anchovy?
Honestly, the three things you just said are great. So,
and these guys were petty as fuck with all this too, and extremely Canadian. They would change meeting rooms, not tell Rossmo, and then chastise him for being late. They cut his office supply budget so he couldn't buy enough paper.
What a fucking nerd, though. Come on, Rossmo. At some point, Rossmo, you need to get your own shit together. You need to fight for yourself.
Paper is expensive.
It is kind of funny to cut his office supply.
Oh, yes, it does. It is. Where is my damn stapler?
I swear to God, I had
a new box of staplers. I had a whole new box of staplers and staples in here.
Yeah, yeah. And the strangest thing is I'm stapling all four of the sides of my papers with these four staplers. Yeah.
Why always?
You dickheads are the problem. You're right. People like me never get any work done.
Well, I don't know why you don't have a stapler.
And another time, someone needed a bulletin board, so they just came in and took Rossmo's without saying a word.
Hey, guys,
I'm in the middle of a crime scene. I just...
Well, had they just listened to the man in the police department who spent half a decade screaming that there was a serial killer on the loose, they could have saved dozens. Oh. And it wasn't just Kim Rossmo either. The Vancouver Sun did some fantastic investigative reporting to really get the attention that this case deserved.
Yeah.
And there were people in the downtown east side that were there every single day. I mean, if I'm getting this worked up about all this, like, imagine the people that were down there that have been down there for decades watching these women disappear one by one by one and the police doing nothing.
Caseworkers, the families of the victims, all of these people in the area, other sex workers that are just in the watching their friends just disappear off the street. It was incredibly, incredibly dangerous. And it got to a point where it's like, I wish the outreach had went so far as to help them get out of those neighborhoods instead of just making them happy to be there.
Well, I was actually talking to our new intern, Rachel, the other day.
Oh, yes.
And she has a friend that actually spent like a year in the downtown east side, like writing a paper, really studying like everything that went around down there. And she told me that in those needle exchange programs, they actually have a room upstairs that's a detox facility. Mm. But the problem is that the detox facility doesn't get as much funding as the needle exchange and all the other shit. Like, the detox program is almost an afterthought.
Mm.
Yeah, and that guy is actually a listener. So, hello.
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 And it wasn't just the cops. It was the higher-ups, too. Even one of Vancouver's mayors in the late 80s essentially said it was a terrible thing that all these women were dying, but what can you do?
What can you do?
Hey, I welcome there. Our name's Mayor Griskins in Vancouver. I tell you, there's a couple of fun things to do around here. I know there's a lot of women dying, but I tell you what you can do. You can go up to Paul Kinquit. You get yourself a 4-foot hole in ice. You bring your old lady up there, and you sit there, and you got some good fishing going. And then you get a moose to come out of the woods there, right? Begin to make love to your wife. You videotape it.
Sort of a moose film, a sexual...
Cuckold film.
And what does this have to do with the missing sex workers in Vancouver's downtown east side?
What can you do? It's just things that you can do when you ask, what can you do?
Yeah.
Now, it's possible that Willie's first victim was Wendy Louise Allen, who disappeared from the streets on March 30th, 1979. She was the first of many to go missing altogether that could be in some way linked to Picton over the next 20 or so years.
Hmm.
The next was Rebecca Gounod, who disappeared on June 22nd, 1983, followed by Yvonne Marlene Abagosis on New Year's Day, 1984. Hmm. And this falls in line with what we know about serial killers. The gap between the first and second victim is usually pretty big.
Right.
The thrill the killer gets from the murder lasts longer.
Well, it's because it's fresh, and it's the first time he's ever, like, fulfilled his fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so then he really is riding on it, and he's probably really worried about what's going to happen with the body, what's going to happen afterwards, he's going to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like all of a sudden things can build up, and then all of a sudden number two starts really popping his head around the horizon.
Yeah, sometimes it can be years between number one and number two, but that cool down period gets shorter and shorter every time, which I knew you were going to laugh at between number one and number two.
If it takes years between number one and number two, you got to change your diet. You got to infuse even some candy or fiber, just get something in there. It should not take that long.
I see what you're doing right there. Eating a lot of protein, eating a lot of carbs right there. Shouldn't be doing that.
Shouldn't be doing this.
You need to be eating a lot of sunchokes.
That's what I got. I ate close to a pound of sunchokes last night, and I farted myself awake in the middle
like
of the night.
Like CeeLo did on the plane ride that you were on.
Yes.
With.
Yes.
Now, the cooldown period gets shorter and shorter every time, which is usually how these guys get caught. But if nobody gives a fuck about the victims and nobody's watching out in the areas they're being taken from, then the killer can have multiple slip-ups before anyone pays attention, as we'll see in spades with Willie Picton. Now, the earliest known story is of the grapevine sort, but in 2004, a former sex worker in the downtown east side said that a friend of hers actually filed a report of kidnapping and assault against Picton in 1984.
Hmm.
The story is unverified, but it falls in line with both Picton's and the Vancouver Police Department's patterns. Nothing was done, and it wouldn't be the last time Willie would escape the law. And part of this had to do with the crew he ran with.
I will say that's the one difference between Picton and a lot of the other serial killers is that he had a crew. Like, he had a mm-hmm. bunch of people around him. He had his brother. He had people, like, in that whole, like, and the more people he brought into the world of the pig farm, there were more people there that were then complicit with his crimes, which then made them have to be secretive about it.
Right.
Like, so you'll see, I think that really protects him a lot of the time, is the fact that he has there's a lot of trickle down to get to him.
Yeah.
It does seem a little bit strange, though. It's not like this guy was, a senator's son. He's a pig farmer. I just don't see how he was an untouchable by the law enforcement. You're like, we can't deal with it. We don't take down the Picton family.
They're
the best pig farmers around.
We'll actually get into why. There are actual reasons why. I mean, first of all, Willie Picton and Dave Picton were millionaires.
They were huge business people in the center of, like, Vancouver. These guys were running a massive industry.
Yeah. Now, late last episode, we talked about the criminal endeavors of the Picton brothers and the complicitness of Willie's brother Dave cannot be understated in this story. In fact, a lot of the dirtbags that hung around the Picton farm can share the blame here. Part of the reason was because they were all awful people as well. These were fucking terrible scumbags that hung around the Picton farm.
And have you seen a picture of Dave?
No.
Dave looks like, you know that guy with the big crazy beard that's that hotel chain mascot? He also sort of looks like the other dude from the Game of Thrones. I sound like my mother.
Right.
I sound like when I'm describing things.
Now, I'll give you an example of just Dave Picton in particular being an absolute huge piece of shit. In the early 80s, Dave sexually assaulted a young woman who was working as a flag girl for one of his construction projects because that was Dave's part of the business. Dave did construction and demolition specifically. Dave was charged, but as the trial drew nearer, he sent some of his biker friends around the girl's house for a little witness intimidation. And this was something that the Picton brothers would do again and again, and that's part of why people didn't report Willie Picton when they knew shit was weird or wrong. That's part of why even when we get into, in the third episode, when we get into the most baffling of Willie's escapes, the intimidation factor has a lot to do with it. But in this case, Dave was still found guilty, but he was only fined $1,000 and got probation.
What?
Fined and probation.
Oh, my goodness.
I tell you what, dude. Look, the piggy mafia runs so fucking deep.
This is the piggy mafia.
Stinky piggy mafia.
Oh, man.
They're out there. You got there because bikers are just as smelly as pig farmers.
Oh, sure. Mm.
And you're out there. Man, just the waves of flies would be a lot to deal with. It's like a walking Amityville horror everywhere they go.
So there's some systemic issues going on here in Vancouver when it comes to letting these scumbags get away with all these horrible things.
Yeah. Now, over the years, the Picton Farm became a place for all the lowlifes of Vancouver and Coquitlam to drink, hang out, and relax. And even though everyone still called Dave Piggy behind his back, he was still in charge of the whole damn thing.
Well,
but he was also one of those guys that liked to brag about his criminal connections. He liked to brag that he knew some Hell's Angels. He liked to brag that he knew, like, one of Vancouver's most notorious criminals. This guy was like a crack cocaine kingpin.
Okay.
He'd tell everybody that he knew these people.
He's still just Piggy behind their backs, though.
Yeah.
And also, I'm sure that those people love to hear him talking shit about them and explaining how he knows them as much as possible. There's nothing like big secret, like criminals love, is for everyone to tell everyone all of their business.
Oh, that's not a surefire way to get yourself wearing cement boots and being on the bottom of the lake. No, absolutely not. Talk about them.
Well, Dave was kind of the social butterfly of the scene, but nobody paid a whole lot of attention to his weird brother, Willie. All anyone knew in the 80s was that you never went into Willie's room.
Why would you want to?
I don't know.
One girlfriend of Dave's who breached Willie's boundaries got a death threat and a glass of milk in her face for wandering into his basement.
That's called starting a Canadian duel.
Oh, no. It's worse than being slapped in the face with gloves.
Yeah.
So he's just sitting in his basement slamming whole milk?
Yeah, well, he's just like, we've got another milkman.
Another milk
Kaczynski.
Guy.
Milk we man. Got David
we
Burke.
We might have to start banning milk. Is milk the problem?
Milk is a problem. It's becoming one. It's also politically a problem. Like,
yes.
But Willie Picton, imagine that too, because you got the guy that's the big, like, probably fake hard ass. It's talking about all his criminal connections. You got bikers hanging out. He's covered. He's the hard ass of the entire industry. He's got a nice beard. He's telling about his connections. But then he's got the other brother, Willie, that's essentially creepier.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just kind of wanders around. And then they have to all, like, because you know Dave compensates for Willie. Like, he'd say, like, a weird joke. He's like, oh, isn't that right, Willie? And Willie would be like, yeah. He's like, Willie's different. Willie's my brother. You say anything about Willie. You know what I mean? Like, he gets super protective of him.
Yeah, right. Well, he'd always say that Willie was a few tiles short of a load.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
It's a construction thing.
Okay.
Well, Willie was the guy, the reason why they would go into his room is because Willie was the guy they'd pick on. They'd like to make, like, Willie was one of those guys that he was super funny when he got mad.
Yeah,
he
yeah. That's super good. I feel so bad for the people who are funny when they're mad.
Yeah. No, Willie also kept pets. One was a vicious dog Willie would feed raw meat, and the other was a hulking hog that terrified even the bikers who hung out at the Picton place. Willie just let this huge hog chase people around, and he'd laugh, and he'd laugh, and then eventually he'd come and call the hog off because the only person the hog would answer to was Willie.
Do we know if the dog or the pig were friends? Because if they were,
and another
that's kind
unusual
of
unusual animal friendship for Netflix.
For Netflix.
That would have been great.
That's a cute B-side.
Criminal animal friendship.
Oh!
It's criminal animals that are also friends.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Could be.
Well, the one thing that Willie would try to do to win people over was to offer them free meat.
Hey, that's great.
Yeah, that's...
Now, most said that the meat that Willie tried giving away was rancid.
Oh.
But others just ate it willingly.
Oh.
They're bikers.
Yeah, I mean, one woman said that Willie tried giving her, like, a side of beef that had an abscess on it.
Oh, God.
You know, like, if meat is ever just handed to you.
Right.
Never take it. It should come in, like, a wrap thing. It should be in, like, a plastic bag. It should at least have some form of presentation. It should never be handfuls of loose beef.
Right.
No, we don't know for sure if Willie was mixing in his victims with the meat he was handing out.
Ooh.
But one person who ate Willie's meat swears she got hepatitis C from eating
it. I mean, you know, that's a problem. So the blame can go anywhere. But it finally comes down to it being like, oh, it had to have been the meat I was eating. It's kind of like when you wake up super hungover and you're like, it was that last beer. That's what did it to me. Not the hours of drinking.
Yeah, she claims that she would never have gotten hepatitis C had she not eaten, you know, meat from a segment of the population that was known to be a breeding ground for hepatitis, A, B, and C.
Is that a way to get it? Can you eat your way to hepatitis C?
I don't know.
I hope not. I tell you what.
Now, the people around the compound, like I said, they'd all play pranks on Willie, if you could call them pranks. Now, since Willie hated getting wet, even into adulthood, people would start water fights around him.
Like
start,
this guy.
And he starts shooting eggs out of his back, like in the Gremlins.
This guy's like Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, he'd
he
end
just
up
hates
getting,
water, huh?
He'd end up getting drenched, and people would point and laugh at him, and he would actually, like, jump up and down like Yosemite Sam.
Yep, his friends are frickin' frickin'.
And he also, he had bright orange hair like Yosemite Sam, God. Too. God, I would have loved to see that.
This guy is still alive, right?
Yeah.
If you see him, throw water on him. Just see what happens.
Even though Dave egged all this on and in some cases led the torment of Willie, the two still worked together on a day-to-day basis. Every morning, Dave, Willie, and their employees would get together and have breakfast at a Coquitlam strip club called the Golden Ears to portion out the work.
If your strip club heavily advertises how good the ears are in the establishment and on the dancers, I don't know if it's going to be the best location for your bachelor party.
I don't know.
It's the best one for breakfast.
I don't think it is the best. Denny's is where you go for breakfast.
Well, you used to go. What was the place you used to go to, Kissel? The Porthole? Is that the one that had the free hot dogs?
That was in Miami, Florida. There's a place called the Porthole. I went there with my friend Jason Kepler. They had free hot dogs, boiled hot dogs. Ah. The most disgusting thing of all time. I do not recommend eat. Who could ever eat at one of these places?
What was that place you used to go to in Madison? Smut and Eggs?
Smut and Eggs, which has since closed. That was not a jiggle joint or a strip club. They just had smut on the television, and then they would serve eggs, and my friend used to get Bloody Marys from there, and I did not trust the quality of the produce.
Smut meaning hardcore full penetration pornography.
And then they closed it. It was a staple in Madison, Wisconsin. It was open for like 40 years. I swear to God, everyone used to go there. They just closed it this year.
I just feel like Guy Fieri would go there and then send the camera crew out. Like, you'd be like, oh, you know, this is like, sorry guys, this is gonna work out for everybody. So you guys just leave. I'm gonna catch up with the rest of the group. And then it's just him being like, sometimes a man's got to take a trip to Flavortown alone.
Out of bounds. That's out of bounds.
Well, even daily strip club meetings weren't enough to cool the tensions between the brothers, which built up for years and years. And in the early 90s, things got so bad that Willie moved out of the basement altogether and spent a couple of months sleeping on a bed on top of one of the freezers out in the meat shed.
Like Snoopy.
What? Yeah. The world's dumbest cartoon dog.
Eventually, they got Willie his own trailer at the back of the property near the slaughterhouse, and Willie was happy to finally have some privacy. But as much as he valued that, he still had friends. Now, ironically, throughout his life, Willie always had at least one close female friend.
How does it happen? Where is the charm? I just don't get it.
I think there's a thing in weird conservative side of criminality, right? Where it's kind of this idea of we're better than everybody else. We're a part of the piggy mafia. We're familia. We're La Costra Pigstra. We're here like with each other hanging out. But a part of it is this, right? He gets a woman who also views herself to be above sex workers like he is. And they both sit and talk shit about everybody else. We're on the same page. And also there are people that look to him, I think also like a charity case, which we'll get to as well as we go deeper into this.
Actually, I think it's the exact opposite of that. Willie bought his way in all this.
Interesting.
Like he would, what he would do is that he would, you know, because Willie was a fucking millionaire, he would buy women groceries, he would pay their bills, he just wasn't horrible to him. That's all it was, is that he would buy them shit and he wasn't horrible to him. And a lot of these women, like they were all, a lot of them were getting out of horrible abusive relationships.
Okay. Well, yeah, maybe if it's a perfect storm, because this guy, he's surrounded by flies. He smells like the inside of a human colon. I just don't understand how anyone would want to hang out with him. But I suppose if they are that desperate for friendship, this is a kind of a small town in some ways.
In some ways.
As long as you're funny, you can get anybody.
Yeah, maybe Willie.
Well, one of these women was Tanya Carr. She was a friend of Dave's daughter, Tammy. Tanya had been keeping her horse at the Picton farm for years, and when she fell on hard times in 1994, she moved into Willie's filthy, stinking, pig shit covered trailer for 18 months.
Good God.
But she said it was more like living with an uncle than anything.
I would never live with my uncle.
Yeah, that sounds horrible. She just made it even worse.
She said he never tried anything and he never got appropriate, despite the two sharing a bed. She'd just go to work at Amigo Pancake House, which is still open, by the way.
Can you imagine
this
woman?
She used to go to Willie Picton's fucking bathroom. She used to take a shower in there. She used to walk around and then go serve flapjacks.
Do you want to?
Flapjacks are they soak up the most of all of the foods in the world. Flapjacks absorb the most stuff.
Yeah. Ma'am, I found a hair in my flapjacks, and my eggs also seems to have multiple hairs.
If you put it on the very tip of your finger and you blow it off and make a wish, it'll come true. And hopefully that wish is for hepatitis C, because you got it.
You got it.
Well, after she came home from Amigo's Pancake House, she just helped Willie out on the farm. So they had this nice little symbiotic relationship going on. But here's what's interesting is that no women went missing from the downtown east side while Tanya was living with Willie. So it's assumed that he wasn't active at all during that time. In fact, Willie stayed good for 3 years, from 1992 till 1995.
That makes him very similar to Gary Ridgway.
Yeah.
Again, it's like there's something about having a fulfilling, close, intimate relationship that will allow you to kind of to pop out of it, which is what have we talked about it again and again with serial killers. So a lot of these guys, if they could figure out how to breach the gap socially, that they would have been saved early on. But mostly it's because they're losers and they can't figure out how to communicate, and that's why they start murdering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If Willie hadn't have been a millionaire and been able to buy his way into all this shit, first of all, he would have been caught much sooner, but I think he would have reached berserker mode a lot sooner.
Okay.
But when 1995 came, Willie took 4 women down to his farm, never to return. And Stevie Cameron actually had testimony in On the Farm, the book where we're taking a lot of this information from. She got an interview with a survivor around this time, which gives us a little insight into Willie's possible motivations. Tracy Bunyan was picked up from the downtown east side by Willie, who was looking for a blowjob.
He was out on the town. Yeah, he was out on the town. He had his cane. You know what I mean? He had his rings on. He had just seen cats. He was looking for a blowjob.
Out on the town, flipping a coin.
Now, Tracy said she almost didn't get into the truck because the smell was so disgusting. Mm. She said Willie's trailer was more the same, if not worse, but as a professional, she went through with it. And the other thing that she noticed about the trailer was that it was full of clothes.
Yeah.
Specifically, women's clothes.
Yep.
Now, once they were done, Willie started saying he couldn't find his wallet, and he accused Tracy of stealing it. Willie picked up a knife and cut 2 buttons off her shirt. Tracy just backed up and walked outside. And eventually, Willie came out and drove her back to Vancouver. And she said the whole way back, he talked about how he liked to help working girls kick their drug habits. He told Tracy that he only gave these girls 1 chance. And if they relapsed, then they didn't deserve to live and were better off dead.
Oh, God.
Yep.
And this type of thing is not uncommon at all in the serial killer world.
We've seen this a lot, right? Because basically, again, it's the series of allowances. You're setting up a system of rules of like, this is what happens. This is what has to happen in order for me to kill. I can change the rules anytime I want. I can hasten up the process as much as I want. But a part of it, it's like as soon as it's clicked, and it's like you got to work yourself up.
Yeah, and then you can also victim blame, right? And be like, well, they didn't follow the rules, they relapsed or whatever.
Yep.
And nonsense.
Exactly like Eileen Wuornos. She's a great example of this. She had to convince herself that her victims were going to sexually assault her before she had the rage she needed to pull the trigger. And since she had built it up so much in her mind, she was able to convince herself that she was doing a great service.
Right.
And Picton was the exact same way. He was known to pick up the girls in the downtown east side that had the worst drug habits. habits, playing the white knight who was going to help him kick. But when they inevitably asked for drugs, Willie would use that as an excuse for murder, rationalizing it by saying they didn't deserve to live.
It is a very deep, dark extrapolation of the nice guy syndrome, because that's what it is too, is that he had this kind of idea that he's better than everybody else. I've now made a bunch of money, and a part of it, I think that's a validation for it. And then he sees what he views as the positive effect he's had on women's lives by dumping money into their life. Mm-hmm. Right? And so now he's just like, I can choose to give this gift or not, and if you decide to reject it, then I'm just gonna kill you, which makes him, I like this, he is a missionary serial killer.
Yeah,
because that is true, which is a very interesting side of him, where he is just like, he just thinks he's the best thing that ever happened to these girls.
Yeah,
horrible.
He's a missionary serial killer in the same way that Eileen Wuornos is a missionary serial killer, in the same way that Gary Ridgway is a missionary serial killer, is that these people believe that they're doing a service to mankind. That's how they rationalize everything.
I don't want to make light of any of this stuff, but I am thinking super soakers.
Yes.
Just soak this guy immediately. Just always be armed with a super soaker.
So yeah, in other words, like,
if we just knew his, because he has Achilles heel is water.
So you think that, like, all the downtown East Side women should have, like, treated it like Ernest Scared Stupid?
Yes, maybe. Yes.
I'm just...
Like the aliens from Signs? Like, that's what this is?
What a scumbag.
I mean, call Willie what you will, as far as this whole missionary serial killer thing goes, but he was no hypocrite. This guy was bone sober. Always. The only time he had ever drank in his entire life was the night before he set off through America in the 70s on his ill-fated cherry pie trip.
And that's why we'll see that I think the dope is the thing that was his very specific trigger. Because he made it his whole thing of being like, if I can stay sober in the world that I live in, everyone should be able to, and that's the only way to live.
Is there any credence to the idea that these cops were like, well, he's killing sex workers who are addicted to heroin? I guess we're not that against what's happening.
I can definitely see that. I think that there's obviously a stripe in that. We're going to find out, too, when it comes into once we get into what the pig farm turns into, how all that old boys club kind of expanded to the pig farm.
Yeah, and at some point,
they're almost allowing it to happen.
Yeah, I mean, they don't care.
You must feel that.
It's one less person for them to worry about. That's how, like, cold some of these... I mean, and there's... You know, and that is not to say that, like, all cops and detectives think this way. There are a ton of them that really work hard to solve these cases, but there are plenty of cops around the entire country, hell, in the entire world, just people in authority figure positions that just don't want to deal with it, and they want their job to be easier by any means necessary. And if that means people have to die, then so be it.
Kissel, one day you're going to be a senator, and you'll be invited to one of these Skull and Bones party, and it's going to be you, Hillary Clinton, Henry Kissinger kept alive on a fucking machine, watching a mute Asian girl dance on a sword. And they're going to be like, you ready for this? This is hilarious. And they're all going to be laughing. They're like, oh, this is almost as good as Young Sheldon. They'll be slapping each other on the back.
They are going to love Young Sheldon.
Yeah.
Well, throughout Willie's life, he always made an extra special effort to portray himself as a good guy who'd always help people when they were down.
I hate people like this so much.
That always,
yeah, I'm the nice guy.
Yeah, I'm the nice guy. But he wanted people to think that he was a good guy, that people could depend on him.
Trust him.
Yeah, that they could trust him. And he did this particularly with women, either as a way to cleanse himself of his sins through some weird backwards roundabout way, or to just throw people off his trail. But an incident when Willie was a child points to something possibly a little deeper. He once gave a bag of hot dogs to a little girl named Lisa Yelds for free.
It's like Pennywise the Clown, but the Canadian piggy farmer version of it.
Lisa, I've been noticing you for a long time. I've been watching you from the back of class, and it's been hard. You know, I want to be able to say something to you.
What do you want to say?
It's a bouquet of hot dogs. This is what you call when you group together a bunch of hot dogs and you give it like it's flowers.
Robert, that's really nice. I'm a vegetarian.
You deserve to die!
Yeah, he stole some hot dogs from his parents' meat locker and gave this little girl a whole bag of them.
That's kind of, that's sweet.
It's kind of sweet, you know? Like,
it is.
So, like, he,
sorta.
It's sort of.
I don't know. He gave what he knew.
He gave.
He knows hot dogs, and he gives them.
Yeah, and through chance, those two, Willie Picton and Lisa Yelds, would meet up years later, and she would become one of the most important people in Willie's life for a time.
Okay.
Now, Lisa Yelds was the mother of one of Dave Picton's children, and for some reason, she and Willie just got along.
Well, yeah, he gave her hot dogs.
Now, Lisa was the only person around the Picton farm who could ever get Willie to take a bath. According to an interview she gave in On the Farm, she'd say something like this to Willie.
Willie, you're getting a little ripe there. I think you need a bath and a change of clothes here, pal, because you're getting a little rude there, eh?
It's like I didn't even give you hot dogs at all the way you're treating me.
Yes, that's better with the
Now, again, the relationship never got sexual, but sometimes they cuddle a bit. Now, contrary to what people said about Willie not being able to have standard sex, Lisa said she woke up more than once with a boner in her back.
Hey, hey, you like my Willie alarm clock? It's wake-up time. You know how you can tell? The rope got long.
Anyways. So disgusting. God, it is amazing that there were people around this guy.
Yeah, I just constantly. There were always
people. It's
hard
to wrap my head around it, honestly.
Willie Picton was rarely alone in life. Like, he would be kind of a solitary guy on the farm. But, like, in life, he always had, like, a couple of people around. He had friends throughout his life.
He's not like a Ted Bundy-looking dude. Mm-mm. I mean, he's a...
No, he's just another dirtbag.
But I guess, as you mentioned earlier...
But they're all dirtbags.
Yeah.
This is the quality of his company is not very high. Like, this is a group of very strange human beings.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Lisa and Willie would even go on little dates together. One night, Willie took her out to see a kids' magic show in New Westminster. Lisa said Willie would clap and laugh at every trick, bewildered at the skills of the magician.
Oh, that is, that's incredible. He's a wizard. We need to burn the wizard alive.
Tell me, wizard. I can see how you made that little ball disappear, but tell me, can you make a hooker disappear? Just ask it. It's just a terrible question.
As Mr. Picton. Oh, my God. Of course he liked magic.
Of course.
I like magic.
What do you mean? You love magic.
I like magic. No, but not like that.
You love... No,
I'm
you
not
going to
clap like a seal and be like, how did it happen? How did it occur?
Yes, you love illusory magic.
I do.
Yeah, you're a card trick guy.
Well, what happened?
Now, even though Yelds claims to have never known anything about Willie's other life, she said she always got a particular vibe from him. She said,
I always had it in the back of my mind that Willie could be a serial killer, but I was never afraid of him myself. I knew he would never hurt me. But everyone else, yep.
Yeah, if it's in the back of your mind, I say bump it up. Get it forward, and then get it to your mouth, and then go to the police. Get your little feet to the police, and then tell them.
If you just so happen to think your friend might be a serial killer.
Might be.
So even though Willie would describe himself as, quote-unquote, only a pig man throughout the years, he ran... What?
It's like a sad school. Like, I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill. I'm only a pig man.
Now, throughout the years, he ran quite a few other side businesses out of the Picton farm with his brother Dave. Their first endeavor was cockfights.
I just don't understand the entertainment value of cockfights. I like watching humans fight. Like, I like even just a bare knuckle fight.
Sure.
Like, I would be down with something like an octopus fight. No. But something about chickens just going at each other, it's just not that entertaining. Like, I don't think it's gross. I just don't think it's very fun.
Especially after watching the great documentary, I believe it's on iTunes, it was on Netflix, Chicken People.
You have to watch
Chicken People. If you haven't seen Chicken People, that is a must-see on the queue.
Now, using connections with a Filipino butcher Willie had worked with since the 70s, Dave and Willie put on all-day, all-night cockfights every Sunday for Vancouver's Filipino population.
Okay. All right.
Now, while the cockfights were a great success, the business they started after that in 1995 was even more lucrative. Since the Pictons have been hosting parties at the... No, they made
more
a lot of money at these cockfights.
How much money did you make in cockfights?
No, thousands upon thousands of dollars every Sunday.
You're Filipino, man.
putting $1,000 on a cock named Barry.
Really?
Like,
right?
He just showed up and he'd be like, $1,000, cock named Barry. He'd be like, yeah, look how big his feet are. His feet are, he clawed an eye. You go look at him, he's so excited to claw the eye out of his enemy.
I'm not sure if that's a Filipino accent.
I don't know.
I'm not sure if that's accurate.
I don't know.
But that's why I like BattleBots, because you can bet, but they're machines.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, these guys had a great, I mean, they had a division of labor. Dave was out there taking bets. Willie was backstage getting all the chickens ready. He'd clean up the dead ones. He'd put all the little spurs on their feet.
I put the shoes on a chicken. Dave does all the drinks and all the money and organizes all the stuff. My whole job is I put the shoes on the chicken and I put the goggles on the chicken. And the hardest part is calming the chicken, because you know what you have to do? Hours and hours of it. Tanya loves it.
Yeah, Willie, I gotta ask you, do you ever feel bad if you put the shoes on the chicken, you relate to the chicken, and then the chicken goes and dies in the ring? That must feel kind of make you sad.
You know, I could be sad, but it's like nothing has ever made me feel a single thing.
Oh.
And so it's like a weird, I look at it and be like, I should be sad right now. But then it's like, but think about how happy Sofia Vergara will be once this chicken is turned into concealer for her.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, and then besides just those two, they also had the Filipino butcher. His name was Pat Casanova.
Ooh, yeah. And what a Casanova he was.
Yeah, they had him cooking up barbecue pig.
Ooh.
Yeah, so they had these, they had two big revenue streams. Like, they had so much, they were selling so much barbecue pig that Willie and Pat were like butchering pigs. They had to store them in these big meat lockers so they'd have enough meat for every Sunday. And the other thing about that is that every once in a while, like, it was like an actual food business.
Yeah.
So every once, and the freezers kept breaking down and the pigs would get very warm. But the food inspectors kept coming by and shutting them down. And instead of cleaning things up, they just wait like a month until they knew the food inspector wasn't going to come back for a while. And then they just open back up again.
Okay.
Oh, great. Great, great stuff.
But Filipino stuff. Barbecue.
The Canadian infrastructure is really working there.
Filipino barbecue, a little pig. Ooh, that's good, though.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I mean, that's fantastic. I know. I bet it was fantastic meat.
Honestly, it does sound like a fucking great Sunday.
Yeah.
Seeing a cockfight is on the side. You're having a couple of drinks. You're eating delicious barbecue. I'm starting to get sold. I gotta get out of this one.
Yeah, not the cockfight part.
Not the cockfight part.
But, yeah. Yeah, if they were presenting fun chickens.
Yeah, just like, oh, you mean a chicken show.
Or a dog show.
It's called a chicken parade.
Chicken parade. I love that.
Since the Pictons have been hosting parties at their place for years, Dave figured he might as well make some money off it. He got the idea as he was tearing down a country bar in a strip mall called the Boo Pub. He salvaged as much of the bar as he could and opened up the Piggy Palace on the Picton Farm. Since everyone called him Piggy, he's like, fuck it, let's call it the Piggy Palace. And they officially incorporated it as the Piggy Palace Good Times Society.
Oh, my goodness.
I really love it.
Okay. Hold on. So this man now, how many people has he killed by the time he opened up the Piggy Palace?
1995. Man, I don't
know.
But
we're in some high numbers.
We're in double digits without
double
a doubt,
digits.
If not more. If not, it's definitely in the teens, if not the 20s.
So this guy is a man about town. Everyone knows he owns the Piggy Palace.
Well, he doesn't necessarily own the Piggy Palace. Dave is the one that really owns the Piggy Palace. I mean, Willie kind of owns it with him.
He's just doing all of the dumb shit work on the farm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, Dave is running everything. Willie's the weird dude who's hanging out in the background. He's the Charlie Murphy.
Yeah. I see.
Of the group. Yeah. For a while. Or it's like, where later it's like he would show his true colors, like Charlie Murphy did as well, with someone who can also stand on his own.
Sure.
But he was like, at this point, was just kind of a hanger-on.
Yeah. All right. Well, they should have remade that movie Coyote Ugly. Call it Piggy Palace. Now we have ourselves a true horror story for the times.
And how brave it would be.
How brave.
And these guys, they went all in with the Piggy Palace. They hired security. They hired door people, bartenders. They had bands come in and play every Saturday night.
Do we have any idea what bands were there?
You got the Rush cover band Clush. That's also the Rush cover band Tom Sawyer's best friend.
Ooh.
The two Rush cover bands that are the best. You've got the Willie Picton band.
Oh.
Which you would just let him just go up there and play on a bucket, and he'd all laugh and throw chicken parts at him, and he'd be like, "Thank you, thank you," like in House of a Thousand Corpses.
That's exactly what I am thinking.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Running Down a Dream. Of course, the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers cover band. R.I.P. Tom Petty.
R.I.P. Tom Petty.
So sad. Honestly, it's incredibly sad. I'm sad that we brought it up.
Mm-hmm. Now, on a good night, these guys would bring in $10,000 in one night.
Wow.
Sometimes they would bring in as much as $40,000.
What, Canadian.
$40,000 Canadian.
Can you imagine if this was on Bar Rescue? And just be like, Willie, do you notice the waitress is stealing some of your money there? She's charging extra for the drinks and pocketing the extra $2.
That's her job.
And with everyone coming in and having a great time on his land, Willie Picton figured he'd try his hand at being one of the cool kids.
Oh.
He decided it was time to finally polish up his look after all these years. He took a shower.
Wow.
And a friend said it was the first time he'd never smelled pig shit on Willie Picton.
Wow.
I could see him taking a shower, and then he comes out of the shower and immediately comes Robert Picton.
Like a Family Matters
champagne for everyone involved. Caviar. It's actually it's clumps of chicken shit, but I call it caviar.
Well, the other problem Willie had with his own appearance was that he was bald.
Oh.
And so Willie spent about $2,300 on a hairpiece from the Hair Club for Men.
Yep.
And so it was like what they said is that the colors didn't even really match.
Of course.
They kind of matched, but not really. And the other thing was is that he never washed it. He never took the damn thing off for months.
God.
So he'd go under a car to work on it, and he'd come out covered in grease, but never thought to wash any of the grease out of the toupee.
So he's just a stinky mo from the Three Stooges covered in pig poop.
You know what I got to say? The hardest part about being Canadian is the thick hair. I just got to get all the knots out of this. Johnny, you noticing anything different about me?
Your hair looks great, Willie.
Yeah, thank you so much. I purchased it.
Eventually, the toupee had to be thrown away.
The problem is that, honestly, is that I would have even kept it. A Harold. I named him Harold because of that boy. But once he started speaking to me, because it would do stuff like I was just taking him off and putting him, because I have a little mannequin hand, I put it on the night when I go to sleep, and I would just look over at Harold, and I'm like, good night, Harold. And it's like, call the police on yourself. You're doing horrible crimes. And I was like, you got to get out of here. This thing's really, it's busting my high.
So before long,
God, this guy is so pathetic.
He really is.
So pathetic.
Yeah. So before long, the Piggy Palace attracted the attention of the surrounding community because the Pictons had sold off parcels of their land throughout the years, which is part of what made them millionaires, because they bought this land for almost nothing back in, I think, the 50s or the 60s. And then by the time Coquitlam grew and grew and grew, it was eventually pretty much like a suburb. And there was even like a golf course that ran right up to the back of the Picton property, right where Willie lived. And Willie just loved terrorizing the golfers. He's a little gremlin out there.
Oh,
honestly,
God.
This is like Caddyshack.
It is.
If this was just funny, if there was no murders in this would be incredible.
Yeah, just a weird Bozo the Clown looking pig shit covered guy running out on the golf course, snatching up golf balls and then running back to his land.
That
then
is
when
kind
people
of
would come and be like, hey, give me my golf balls back. He's like, get off of my land.
Well, if you
get
rewatch Caddyshack.
It's my land. Oh, you see, I got your golf ball here, Mr. Fancy Golfing Man. See what I do? He puts it into the front of his pants. Oh, it's in a sand trap. Better get your wedge. Yeah. All the fancy people in fancy dress probably going humping the air.
Oh, my God. If you rewatch Caddyshack, yes, that is true. Bill Murray's character is a sociopath.
Yeah, possibly.
Yes.
Yeah. But the Piggy Palace stayed open. And when they were called into court, they pleaded that everything was for charity. Oh. They incorporated the Piggy Palace Good Times Society as a charity.
My father did the same exact thing. It was a part of his motorcycle like gang that he did for a while. Before the my dad was actually offered a chance to open up the Hell's Angels chapter of Newark, and he said no because he was going to be a cop. But before that, he was a part of a bike gang called the Cycle Paths, and what they would do is they would go around the neighborhood, and they would do put up signs say "Stop the Cycle Paths," and they would do this whole like big fundraiser to stop the menace that is the Cycle Paths in the neighborhood. They'd get a bunch of money from the people, and then they buy beer with the money and drink it all night and just raise hell.
It was a scam. It was an illegal scam operation. They terrorized a community, and then he went on to be a police officer, which is when we talk about systemic issues within our law enforcement.
He was a fun guy back when fun was different. Back when fun you could be had in a different way.
Well, one of the big things that you got to understand the Piggy Palace Good Times Society was that their parties were regularly attended by off-duty police officers and high-up city officials.
Oh, my.
I started going down this line a little bit. I started researching. I saw some really interesting forums on the internet, and we're talking about the conspiracies involved with how Willie Picton was maybe used by several high-end different, you know, people, various parts of the government and police officers to clean up, quote-unquote, clean up the streets, and how maybe he was a member of MKUltra and, like, all this kind of stuff, very deep, and I was getting very excited, and so I saw at the very end of this guy that was posting all of his really juicy stuff, connecting him to a guy named Doug Marshall, that was a guy that was originally acquitted that said that he was a murderer, and then they got false evidence, like, all this shit was kind of questionable how why he was released and all of his shit. They said that he was technically innocent, but then they were like, maybe he was covered up by the government. I was like, oh, this is interesting. At the very end of it was like, and then the person posting said, and this is how I knew that Willie Picton wasn't killing clones of me like everyone else is. I was like, fuck. And they're going into cloning centers, man. And how he was, yeah, you know, and that's how you could tell these sex workers weren't clones, because they didn't have the same clone death scenario. And it was like, hold on. I was like, oh, he's insane.
There it is. Start from the bottom. That's what I always say. With most internet conspiracy, if it becomes anti-Semitic or just absolutely insane.
Yeah, just do control F Zionist.
Globalists will also work.
Yeah, globalists also work. There's a lot of different things that you can control F to see if, like, is this going to be a reliable source? Yeah, and this may have something to do with why Willie wasn't investigated for so long. Mm-hmm. Not because of any big, stupid fucking conspiracy, but because these guys were out at the Piggy Palace every weekend, because the Piggy Palace was apparently fun as shit. Like, it was super fun. They had bands. Like, everybody was partying.
It's called the Piggy Palace.
Yeah, people would actually rent out the Piggy Palace for, like, anniversaries and birthdays and shit like that. So everyone loved the Piggy Palace.
There did have to be an odor, right? Or, yeah. I mean, it had to smell like a fart.
Dude, back in Lubbock, like, there was where I went to college, there was a stockyards outside of town. And anytime wind blew from the stockyards, all of Lubbock smelled like cow shit.
That
wasn't even right next to Lubbock. Like, you could be miles away from the stockyards, and you could still smell that cow shit from my miles away.
I had an experience like that recently. The whole town just smells like that, and it just is what it is, yeah.
Yeah, so definitely, as soon as you got to the Piggy Palace, you definitely had to deal with the smell of pig shit.
But once you get used to it, it's just fine.
You know what? And you can get used to it real fucking fast, trust me.
Very adaptable to human nose. Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Well, things wouldn't really get out of hand with Willie Picton until he met accomplice Gina Houston, who we'll meet in part 3.
Oh, my goodness. All right, there it is. Willie Picton, part 2. What a maniac. What a strange story. I can't think of one quite like this, huh?
This is a really bizarre story, and really, you know, like I said, like, we get this story from On the Farm, from this book. That's it. You know, it's an amazing a piece of investigative journalism, and we're having to really, like, skip over a lot of stuff with Willie Picton here. So go read the book. It's very long, but very detailed. It's, you know, I would say it's my favorite true crime book of the last couple of years. Like, it's really, I could not recommend it enough. Like, the full, like, fleshed out story.
No, this story's been so much fun. It's not fun. I'm sorry.
It's interesting.
But like the full fleshed out story of not just this person, not just Willie Picton, but also Dave Picton. Mm-hmm. A lot of the other, she goes into a lot of the other people that hung around the Picton family. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, going into the lives of the victims and going into the lives of the people who worked in Vancouver's downtown east side, you know, the nurses and the volunteers and the caseworkers. It's very detailed, and it really it puts you there. I would recommend this book to anybody who likes true crime.
Yeah,
it's nonfiction.
I will tell you what, though, this story does make me happy. I've showered.
Oh yeah, I feel very
like,
clean.
It really does make me feel clean. I feel clean.
Yeah, kind of a Coyote Ugly meets Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah,
very traumatic stuff here. All right, well, that's it for Willie Picton Part 2. We'll pick it up. Now, is that going to be the final installment next one?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet.
Oh, my goodness. There's a lot to get to here.
Yeah, we still haven't shaped the rest of it yet. So, yeah, we really have to get into it, and we'll see. It might be Part 3. It might be 3 parts. It might be 4 parts.
Wow.
I haven't started on the next
one. There's a bunch of it.
All right.
Because in case you didn't know, these things take a very long time to put together.
Yes, they do, and that's why we are so unbelievable.
Yes, they do.
It's unbelievably thankful for all the Patreon subscribers. Thank you all so much for allowing us to do this.
Yes, always. Thank you so much.
And you can check out the Patreon. How do they get to that,
Just
Marcus?
Go to patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. We appreciate anything and everything that you want to give us, you know, from a dollar up. We always, always appreciate it so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
It's really great. We got a bunch of shit to announce.
Yeah.
So we got our LA show, I believe, is completely sold out on October 20th, the LRA Theater.
There's still, I got an email there. They've released a couple more tickets.
Great.
So those tickets are still available, but there are very few. I think there's something like 15 tickets left, maybe 10. So go and get those as soon as you can.
And there's an opportunity to get 2 free tickets if you donate to the No Nude Dudes clothing drive that we have going on at several locations in Los Angeles, which is at the Hyena Gallery in Burbank. We've got the Bearded Lady Mystic Museum that's over close to Burbank, and we've got the Bigfoot Lounge in Glendale. We got a box. You drop off whatever clothes. We're looking for men's clothes only because of the concentration of women's clothes that are already out there, but any clothes are accepted, any sort of items that like that people could use, especially teenagers could use. You go drop it off in the bucket, and then you go and you take a picture of it. You put it on Instagram, hashtag Samhain Gala, which is Samhain Gala, hashtag No Nude Dudes, and we'll pick one random person. We'll give you 2 free tickets to the show.
All right. It's just that easy. And then, let's see. We have the show in Omaha.
It's October.
Yeah.
We're not even talking about it's October. It's time. I feel it in the air. This is our, I think it's important to remember, this Halloween season, it's not just one day a year. Halloween can be every day. If you just let it into your hearts to dress as a creepy skeleton, dress as a skeleton and go to work in May. Dress as a sexy witch and go to the DMV in a July every once in a while. And also,
I don't know.
We're going to have our listener pasta episode coming up. We're going to have some people. So if people have already, if you got scary stories, and this time, honestly, let's get some fucking good, scary shit. I want an abduction story.
Oh,
a
real abduction story. I was about to say, like, the fucking pyramid of human heads story in Iraq that we heard last year wasn't scary enough.
Yeah, we had some pretty horrifying ones. And we'll do that. Where can people submit those stories?
Submit those stories to thelastpodcastnetwork@gmail.com.
Awesome.
And I believe we're going to be taking those calls on the Thursday before the LA show. We're all going to be in LA together, so we're going to take those calls from Henry's apartment in LA. So we're only going to be taking calls for just that day. That's the only day we can get off to do it.
Yeah, very finite amount of time. So hopefully, we'll get the right calls in there.
Yes, and we'll also be taking written submissions. So if there are people out there that want to just type out their story and type it in a fun narrative way, you feel more comfortable doing that than just talking to us over the phone, do that too, because that would be all. We would read those aloud on the show.
Keep it a little bit short. What do you think? 5 to 7 minutes?
Yeah, no, even shorter than that. Okay. Keep it very short. Keep it concise. Keep that shit on point.
Yeah, and of course, we'll do a little editing as well, so, if it's a little bit too long or something.
Yeah.
All right, so is that that's basically it, right?
Well, yeah, follow us on Twitter at HenryLovesYou, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel. Follow us on Instagram at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, the number one. And follow Last Podcast on the Left and all of the bullshit at LP on the Left.
All right, everyone, hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gene.
Let's do a Magustalations.
Sure, hail me. And also, what I would say this, man,
Just don't go to a pig farm to party unless you know the guy.
But they knew the guy. You gotta know the guy. That's actually...
I guess they did.
Yeah.
I guess they did.
I don't know, man. I mean, this really, like, the pig farm really... The whole thing really reminds me of this place back home called Judd. Like, where they used to have this party every year called Judd Fest. And it's...
Yep.
And I've been to a party like this before. God, it's fucking awesome.
They're a blast.
Judd Fest sounds great.
Judd Fest, for the first few years, Judd Fest was an absolute fucking blast. They just put a country band on a big flatbed trailer, and everybody just hang out in a field and get fucking trashed for 3 days. Judd Fest was a fucking blast.
And technically, you were the one that most people thought would be a serial killer.
No.
So you were safe.
No.
You were safe.
Not beautiful Marcus.
No, there were plenty of other candidates besides me.
All right.
No.
Well, maybe that'll be the competition at the Halloween show in L.A. Who's most likely?
Yes, that would be actually fun. Make sure you wear your funny costumes for the L.A. show.
That's it. All right, everyone. Talk to you soon. Magustalations.
Goodbye, and be sure not to wear a costume that obstructs anyone else's view. No wings.
Oh, no wings. Oh, my.
Goodbye.
Good to go, Marcus?
Good to go.
All right, it's time for the Patreon shout-outs. Thank you all so much. We also want to plug our Hail Yourself t-shirt.
Yeah, we got
it. This is a limited edition.
This is limited edition. It's only going to be on sale for about another week. You can go to represent.com/HailYourself to check it out.
Yes, check it out. All right, everyone, let's start the shout-outs. Samir, Chada, thank you all so much. Thank you so much. Hand banana.
I believe that it's an Aqua Teen reference.
Okay. Christopher Mabry. Chris Hughes, Mary Esposito, Laura Lowry, Anthony Higginson, Becky Delgado, thank you so much, Dotron, not to be confused with Dotard.
Dotard.
Sarah Ireland, Hannah Cornwell, William Bennett, Megan Monaco, Yvonne Bolin, Nurse Leah, thank you, Nurse Leah, Justin Snyder, or Justine Snyder. I think it's Justine if there's an E at the end.
Yeah.
Justine Snyder. Sure. Will Thornton, Jamie Kangalosi.
Willie Thornton, that's a friend of ours. What's going on, brah?
All right, what up, dude? Laura Mead, Will Griffith. Let's continue on here with Justin Luckenbau, Rebecca Alize, Hillary Flockhart, Jake Nowakowski, Tim Hill, Jacqueline Smith, Zoe Pruitt, Courtney Chambers, Heather Morehouse, Christopher Cooper, Jasmine Kalnick, Severin Gourley, Paul Bamford, Dejan Dejurek, Anna Ramirez, Kristen P., Kelly Patton, MJ Brennan, Ryan Larravee, and Jake Henson. Hail yourselves. Thank you so much.
Oh, we've got Ramon, John O'Brien, C. Norvell, Matthew Richeza, Seth Biskind, Hannah Jones, Justin Key, Kylie Harrington, Brandy Frederick, Bryce Ray, Will W. Sawyer, Becca, Taylor Nicholson, Jen Sedge, Richard Nett, Itu Sivula, Unknown, Vanessa Almendares, Mallory Udy, MC Megascops, Megascops, Lori George, Megan Penis.
That's what
Penis.
I have.
Penis.
I have a penis.
How is it pronounced? How is it spelled? Penis.
P-A-N-I-S, I believe. Penis.
This is P-A-N-U-S, so it's penis.
Oh.
Panis? Penis. Humplebee. Lauren Cooper. Manzi Howe. Yvette Seaton. Murder Road Trip Podcast. Oh, Daniel Beach. Sonia Malm. Josie Wicks. Desiree Johnson. Jeremy Bolte. Sawyer Landers, BJ McDonald, Lindsay Mellard, Rachel Parkerson, Tom McColgan, Nessa Dundon, Jennifer M. Allen, Anon, Catherine Allison, Jeffrey Connors, My Gooch, Christian Tom, Lucy Rothwell, Sarah, Aaron St. Roman, Doug Chevrolet, Samuel Mejia, Nisa Hamilton, Jake Hartle, Scarlett Rugers, Occulte Veritatis, Danny Tatum, Danielle Cheshire, Jared Luce, what's going on, bro? Stuart Whiterod, Victor, JT, and Murdoch.
I got Linnea Asberg, William Higgum, Sam Law, Mike Lockerbie, Jason Sebacher, Alec Forbes, Nori, Clarissa Fuller, Chris Gutierrez, Kate Manson, Rich Karski, Polly Smith, the B-Boy of Pittsburgh.
Whoa! The B-Boy of Pittsburgh.
Jennifer G. Card, Class Clown Johnny Gacy.
Oh, yikes.
Laurel Rotino, Antonio Munoz, James Knapp, James R. Hernandez, ooh. Daniel Zuko, Joseph Charlesworth.
Danny Zuko.
Danny Zuko.
Oh, boy.
Have you heard? Has he love at first sight?
Joseph Charlesworth, Priscilla Vasquez, J.D. Sorvari, Jessica Maskell, Morgan Bass, Richard Margolin, Dustin Bolden, Philip Lil Jestrand.
Okay.
Samuel Lang, Colleen Smith, Dr. Green Chicken.
Uh-oh.
Alice Lacey, Stephen Milan, Lysander Hansen. This one just made it hard on purpose. My I-All Aminute.
Okay.
Oh.
Rodsella Aragundi, Joshua Messenger. Don't we know that guy?
Maybe.
Anna Marie Million, Cameron Guy, oh. Cameron Giles, and Lilka Marina.
All right.
Marino.
Dan Marino, great quarterback. Never won a Super Bowl. Matt Haig, Rylan, Martin Edwards, Chris Mum Power. I like that Mum Power. Torsten Hild Peterson, Chris Fincher, Jeruel Von Leuden, Julie Moore, Andrew Lenars, Miriam Benjema, Robert Schultz, Scotty Bell, Emmanuel Labonte, Helen Donahue, Sally Hughes, Allison Morrill, Freddie Mudgett, Alan Freddie Mudgett.
Herman Mudgett. H.H. Holmes' real name.
Ooh.
Freddie Mudgett Gately, as a matter of fact, there. Alana Spaulding, Peter M. Ewing, Riley Thompson. Let me continue on with Jeremy Johns, Chase Zukowski, Sarah Kovalsik, Charles Lonnie Eastenson, Mackenzie Tuite. Or it could just be Toot. It's T-U-I-T-E.
Toot.
Mackenzie Toot. Kayla Lopez. Toot.
I don't know. It's Toot.
Toot. It could be Toot. Get Toot. Mackenzie Toot. Kayla Lopez. Morgan. Kathleen. Holly Wagner. Lee. David Otter. Alana Mortensen. Brianna Kristen. Kimberly Marsh. Beverly Marsh. It. Coaster Robertson. Allie Althuis? Lily Laurel, Chris Blackburn, Mike the Fly Hopkins, boxing out of the red corner, Mike the Fly Hopkins, and Claudia. Thank you all so much. Hail yourselves.
Carrie Boyes, Melanie Wolford, Joshua R. Schilling, Merlin Pham, Tony Nall Jr., Steve Robick, Cody W. Ingram, Julian Acuna, Samantha Hall, Robert Suarez, Joey Bagul, Randy Kazarowski, Laura, Lauren Ward, Monica Shunk, Allison Bormett, Sergeant Pepper Dimples, Chris Mills, Matthew J. Plum, Nicole Wanalowski, Jacob Veda, Sarah Giddings, Anton Alid, Martha Olson, Blade Cross. Simon Ebbs, Joanne Boshoff, Jason Freibach sucks huge cocks, your pal T.S. Richardson.
What was that last name?
Jason Freibach sucks huge cocks, your pal T.S. Richardson. The eminent Dr. J, Tony, Ellis Usery, and Melissa Shook. Hail Satan, thank you for your money.
We got Marina Santos, Meta Sutton, Fanny, Kelly, Catherine Hayashi, John Fillmore, Matthew Kittredge, Karen Birch, Emily Herring, David, Tom Marauder, Kelly O'Connell, Brennan Cockle, Anna Marie Million. Ooh, she got on twice.
Oh.
Kelly McIntosh, Ethan Vio, Megan McMahon, Sir Joseph Banksy, Nick.
Well, thank you, Sir Joseph Pegsy. Well, very kind of you,
sir. Greatest salutations to you, Sir Joseph. Nick, Keegan Cole, Grant Garrard, Matthias Bjorklund, Jin Piasecki, Nikos Hessert, Mark Hershey, Amanda White, Loopy Spence, Super Claymation, Musigami, Brittany Phillips. I think we know Brittany Phillips.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think we do, but it's also a common name. Toby Wicks, Trevor McDonough, Johnny Simpson, Cassie Goetti, Aaron Zacharish. Okay. I think it's Zacharish.
Zacharish will do.
Clay Sizemore, Christine Clossy, Neil McFarland, Taylor Pinheiro, Sophia Olson, James Buoti, Matt Younger, Megan Boatwright, Stephanie Schumann, Catherine Pete Peace, Carissa Neese, Charles Hain, Axel Morlotti, John Bellow, Nathan Brocious, Will Wojcik, Sarah Nims, TJ Anderson, Seth, Joseph Ricks, Rohit, Claire Elizabeth Stanksy, Claire.
I'm sorry to be laughing.
I like it. It's cool.
Claire Agner, Jenna McMaster, and Ren Beach.
Thank you all so much. Hail yourselves. You have made this all possible. We look forward to seeing you all at the live shows coming up in the very, very near future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, y'all.
Y'all.
Why we do this.
Magustalations, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein.
Tell me.